What's up, you beauties? Welcome to High and Wide Radio, episode 27, season 6. I'm your host, Jim Iacovone, joined by my partner, Jack Smith. If you guys are watching us live on YouTube, which you probably are, make sure you're subscribed and set an alert for future shows. And if you're listening as a podcast, please make sure you're listening and subscribed on Apple Podcasts or Spotify to get notifications the minute we upload a new show. Wow, boys and girls, Jack and Jims, ladies and gentlemen, we have another topic-packed show for you guys tonight. Flyers survive. They hang on during this run through top NHL teams known as the Gauntlet. They survived it. You know, they didn't exactly ace the exam by any means, but they're still standing. They're still in a playoff spot as of March 27th, 2024, and we're going to definitely talk about that in the show tonight. We're going to talk some Morgan Frost. We'll obviously talk playoff standings as well. Some discussion topics tonight, OT units. I know if you guys watched the last couple OT games, maybe you guys have been just as perplexed as we have with the OT units. So something that we're going to talk about and discuss tonight. We want to know your guys' thoughts and opinions. Tortorella seemingly dodging the media after last night's game. We want to talk about that as well. What's going on there? We're going to have some goalie talk. Sam Ersin, Alexei Kolosov could be on his way over. There's reports. You know, he's going to get his visa. Dynamo Minsk apparently already wishing him well. We'll touch on that, see what's going on there. We do want to talk about the Flyers' defense. You know, stood strong during this run of tough games. Maybe help is on the way. We'll talk about that as well. So, Jack, right off the bat here, let's get to what's happening now with the Philadelphia Flyers. I think on our last show, one of our last shows, we talked about how, you know, the Flyers need to come out of this month 500 for the month, or at least a game or two up, right? And after this stretch of, you know, seven tough games, they are right there. I know two wins out of the last seven doesn't sound great, but when you consider the potential for disaster that this stretch could have been, you know, considering all circumstances, right? You're without your top goalie, you know, it's in Carter Hart, who's not on the team. Currently, you're without Drysdale, you're without Ristolainen, and you're without, you know, for the shot blocker in the NHL at the time, and Nick Seeler, right? So you're without those three guys. We're talking about Addard, Ginning on the same pair. We're talking about Zamula and Eric Johnson as a pair. Looking into these seven games, how did you think it was going to go, Jack? And, you know, compared to what you thought to how they did, how are you feeling about that?
So this is actually something we discussed at the end of our last show, and I felt somewhat vindicated. I would have liked like just one overtime win, you know, just that extra point. They have gone since the trade deadline, 4-4-2, getting a total of 10 of 20 points. And for the gauntlet, they went 2-3-2, which is technically 2-5. But they got 6 out of 14 points, point-wise, almost 500. They're still third in the Metro. Washington, 1 point behind with two games in hand. And obviously Detroit not going anywhere in the wild card. Yeah, I mean, we discussed how we felt they were going to do against Carolina, Boston, Florida, and the Rangers. And we both were kind of down, but I couldn't help but finish with, but they always surprise you. Every time you think these guys are down and out, they really do surprise you. And outside of the Florida game, which Sandstrom looked horrific, and it was the second of a back-to-back, they've looked good. And not, they haven't been perfect. I'm not saying that, but they've looked good in every single one of these games. I thought Carolina was the slam dunk loss for them. They look great. Take that game to overtime. They beat Boston on a Saturday matinee. If you had your money on that one, you cashed in big. I kind of mentioned the Florida debacle. And then they looked never say die against the Rangers. The only like true blunders outside of some, they did have their issues on defense at times. There was a couple of times these guys looked okay. couple of times where a couple of bad sequences led to hanging Arison out to dry, and then overtime really killed him. Like, they didn't say the game was over before it started twice. Yeah, and that sucks. But it could have been, they could have lost all these games, or maybe just won one, or really just got three total points. And they're still in third in the Metro. That's what matters. They got some games coming up. They should take care of business, and they should be getting, it seems, a little bit healthier. Paling did leave the game. He didn't leave the game. He left the loss, the overtime, looking like he did something. I haven't heard anything updated on him. Maybe I completely missed that. But if they do start to get healthy on defense, they could be in store for a better defense of the third in the Metro. And they do have a game against Washington coming up at the end of the season. So where it sits, all things considered, could have been a lot worse. And they did surprise me. Regardless of some of the points they got and the results, we were thinking they were down and out, and they played some really good hockey, at least the last three of the four games.
Yeah, that's for sure. So it started out pretty shaky, right? With a couple of losses to Toronto and Boston, 6-2 and 6-5. And it's like, oh boy, it's kind of what you expected, right? With defense that they're kind of trotting out there right now. You know, they showed life at the end of the Boston game, which I think maybe gave them confidence heading into Toronto at home to Toronto, on 2 days off. They had a big week. This week, or was it last week? I'm sorry. You know, you have a week with Toronto, Carolina, Boston, and you look at that and you're like, man, if they can somehow get 3 points out of there, I think that's what we said before we wrapped up last week's show, right? If they can just find a way to get 3 points, and I think I said even just 2 points, and they found a way to get 5. They beat Toronto. They lost to Carolina in overtime, and we'll touch on that. And they beat Boston. They took 5 out of 6 points from those guys. I mean, that's pretty damn good. And then those ended up being the only 2 wins of the 7-game stretch as they proceeded to – I mean, they play Florida on a back-to-back with Boston the night before. I think a lot of us were expecting that game to be a loss. However, it wasn't like they were tired or for lack of effort. I would argue that they should have won that game, you know, and it was kind of like the game against New York last night where, they kind of took it to Florida for long stretches of the game. Unfortunately, Sandstrom, there was one or two goals in that game where you would have liked to see him make a save. And in a game like that, unfortunately, that's all it kind of took, is the Flyers could only get one past Anthony Stolarz. And so, you know, that's just the way she goes sometimes. You lose some of those games, unfortunately. And I think everyone was okay with that after the week that they had. For me, though, I was looking at... Hang on, did someone just pop in here? Oh, sorry, Jack.
Did you? Did I just completely drop?
Yeah, you completely dropped off there. I just heard you pop in. I didn't know that you were. So, you know, I was just going over some of the games in the gauntlet there, and I think everyone was kind of okay with the Florida loss after the week they had with Toronto, Carolina, Boston. I was a little bit I was chalking up the New York game as a loss. I think New York just kind of has the Flyers number, even though the Flyers have outplayed them in every single game this season, and it looked like the Flyers were gonna finally get one last night. They were up 2-0 very late in the second. And if you're New York, you kind of got exactly what you wanted. You got that late second period goal on the power play, Zibanejad, to kind of give you some life heading into the third. Then they start the third. Eric Johnson kind of coughs up the puck in the corner, and they get the early third period goal. All of a sudden, it's 2-2. You have a brand new game, and you know you have life. It was worst case scenario for the Flyers last night, the way the game played out there in the end. Obviously, the third period was back and forth, exciting, yada, yada. Flyers eventually go on to lose 6-5 in overtime. And Jack, let's kind of transition here a little bit. So the Flyers with their overtime lineups, and we have to assume Tortorella's the guy sending people out. Right. I mean, he's the head coach. All right. So we assume that he's making these overtime lineups. And it's Ryan Poehling. Who else do we got there?
Noah Cates, I believe, was out there.
Noah Cates.
In previous games, like this has happened three times. And I know Scott Laughton was out for one of them. Not that I'm a big, I'm against that or anything. But the main point, and I think you said Poehling was, I don't know if Hathaway was ever out for one. He might have been. But the point is, it's very defensive. Defensive bottom pair, bottom line guys. And while the teams we're going up against are starting like the three best players, offensively. And it's blown up in their face three times against Toronto, against Carolina, and against the Rangers. And it's, I understand the ideology behind what they're trying to do. You know, win the faceoff, gain possession, make some changes. Or if you lose the faceoff, you have defensive guys out there, you can get the puck back and then change and whatnot. The only problem with that is it doesn't work. It's not working three times in very fast overtimes. It's not like they played the whole overtime and they just happened to have this first unit out there. It's like, no, it's been over quick. And these are very important points and games where these guys have killed themselves to stay in it and come back. If you're going to go for the faceoff, you want to just win the faceoff. Like Cooch should have been out there and you can swap him out. Like you at least put him out there with Konechny and then swap him for somebody else if you have to. Or if you're going to have somebody like Poehling out there, one, make sure he's not injured. And two, give him Tippett on his wing or something, like somebody who can do something. You don't need to go full, turtle. Like it doesn't make any sense. It's purely shown. It doesn't work. It's not working. Just move on. These points are too important. I defend towards a lot. I mean, you just got to look at the team and where they're at and then how people have improved on the team and where they're at in the standings. That's your proof right there. Guy knows what he's doing, but there are little things that irk you because it's like, why are you so smart over here or figuring this out over there and then doing something so stupid? If you talk about growing and learning as a coach, you see something's not working, pull the plug. Like, for Christ's sake, pull the plug. Like, these points are way too important. If we were to go up against the Capitals and go to overtime against them, and we have a game coming up against them in like 2 weeks, and this shit happened, like, I would be furious. I would be absolutely furious. So he's got to figure it out, go back to doing what he knows. Our best players against theirs, it's the only way we're going to win.
Yeah, and I agree with that point. It's funny because Scott Hartnell said the same thing after the game last night, and I rarely agree with Scott Hartnell. But Couturier's faceoff percentage on the year is 53.6. Ryan Poehling's 48.7. Like, Coots is one of the better faceoff guys in the NHL. Get him out for the like, what overtime is, it's possession now, right? And once you get possession, it's like you don't have to give the puck up unless – you want to. You can hang on to it for the entire 5 minutes if you so choose, And it's very boring hockey. Like I come from a soccer background, right? And I'm going to put people to sleep, but a lot of soccer is possession. If you have the ball or the puck, the other team doesn't. And if they don't have the ball or puck, they're not scoring. It's really that simple. Hang on to the puck. Drag it back as many times as you need. You can change your players, make sure they keep their guys on, grind them down to a nub, and then go off. It's really not a complicated thing, at least to me. And I know the Flyers are a rush team, and the way they score goals is on the break and all that kind of stuff, and they like to get teams on their heels and all that. But all year long, the overtime has been a disaster. At least in my eyes, even when they were putting out better players like the Konechnys and Megan Riley mentions the Laughtons of the world, they were pressing too much. They were trying to win the game as soon as possible and didn't make sense to me, because the other team's just as fresh as you are. You have the puck, you have an advantage, hang on to it. It's so boring, but let me ask you, when they finally get that goal, who gives a shit how boring the previous 4 minutes were? Now you got that extra point. You got the win. You know what I mean? I'll watch 4 minutes of boring hockey for an extra point. What's the rush? And then to put out, this is no offense to guys like Ryan Poehling because he's played very good all year long. I think he's exceeded expectations. He's played so well. The Flyers have re-signed him already, you know? But it's almost unfair to put him out there against guys like Zibanejad, Panarin, whoever it was out there last night for the Rangers. It's not right, because he's, although he's played very good, he's not up to their skill. And 3-on-3 is a skill game. You know, it's meant for players like that. So he's at a massive disadvantage. I know he's a good two-way guy. He's played very well defensively. You lose that draw and you're kind of screwed, you know? So you're leaving it to a kind of 50-50 chance there. And, you know, unfortunately, it bit him in the ass twice pretty quickly, you know?
Yeah, absolutely. I really hope next overtime we just go with what we did before. I think at the beginning of the season, they actually weren't half bad. So just do that. Best players on best players and play the possession game, try to win the game and be smart about it.
I mean, look at the goals that Tippett scored last night, that Konechny scored last night. I think Frost was on the ice for one of them. He sprung Tippett with another beautiful six sauce pass there. But you look at those goals and it's like, you know, why aren't these guys out? Why aren't they playing 3-on-3? You know, you can understand why a guy like Tyson Forster might not be one of your first choices for 3-on-3, not the most fleet of foot, you know, and this is not to say he's slow, but I mean, look at some of the players teams are putting out there 3-on-3. They can skate, you know, and there's a lot of offense. The Flyers have some of those guys, you know, that it's not like they're offensively inept. They have offensive talent. So, yeah, I mean, to your point, I think it's still fit. You know, we try to be fair. Obviously, we have our biases like anybody else. If we like somebody, we tend not to pick them apart. But I think, you know, this is a fair criticism. It's like, hey, man, like figure out if they could have figured out the offense, I'm sorry, the overtimes months ago, they might have the extra 2, 3, 4 points. And we're not talking about just a 1-point lead over Washington. The overtimes are important. They can't be experimenting in the overtimes. They should be, you know, looking to get that extra point with the best players on the ice. It's not rocket science. I don't know why it has to be a complicated thing.
Yeah. And I mean, you look at a guy like Tippett, who's one of the fastest skaters in the league, and he's not out there. Like, come on. Him and Konechny should be swapping each other for lines and figure out your center and, you know, York and Sanheim on D. And that's who we should be rolling with, you know, and just making it work. I'm tired of this. It's not working. And it just leads to the next part, Jim. It's like, I think the first time he did this and they lost against the Maple Leafs, he spoke to the media for like a minute. And after that, after these debacles, he sent his assistant coaches. Like, what do you think of that? I know a lot of people are upset about it, but what do you think about it?
So I remember, I think he sent out,
it was Rocky Thompson the first time. And last night it was,
one of the Coots bench games?
So I
think it was the game.
I think the one that Rocky Thompson came out for was, yeah.
Yeah. So I was fine with that. You know, you knew what the questions were going to be. And if you weren't, how can I say? So let's say it like this. I don't know Torts, but I know, how can I say? If someone's going to piss me off, and you know, Torts is pretty easily pissed off, right? You just got your ass beat. Whatever it was, it was definitely the Toronto game, right? Which games didn't Couturier play? Was it San Jose and Toronto, or was it, yes, Toronto and Boston? Oh, I'm sorry, no, it was Toronto and then Carolina. Sorry,
yeah, that's it.
So they won 4-3 against Toronto, and I think instead of talking about a win or whatever, everyone would probably want to ask about Couturier. I don't care. You know, it's weird to me that people that go like, oh yeah, you know, where's his accountability? Yada, yada. I don't know. It just,
that's what I'm going to ask you. The accountability thing.
Well, you hear from him every friggin' day. He benched one of his players. and he's choosing not to talk to you. It's not that he's avoiding accountability, at least in my opinion. Who does he need to be accountable to?
So I think
he needs to be accountable to Danny Briere and Keith Jones.
Right. Not the media. That's how I felt. And I think the people who are the most upset about it and who scream accountability are the media. Yeah. I mean, and Torts has never has nothing against the media. It's nothing against the Philly media. He just does not like the media. And if he knows what questions are coming and he knows what's going to be, he's just like, I'm not dealing with this. And as long as those players stay accountable, I could give a rat's ass who Torts talks to. In his mind, he shouldn't have to talk to media at all. He's a coach. You know, all the other stuff is secondary. It's not like the players have to go out there and explain themselves to the media. They get asked, you know, softball questions, basically, and just kind of take it. Nobody really goes after them. And if they have a bad game, they say, yeah, I didn't have it tonight. You move on. Accountability in the locker room is like a million times different than that. And it's a off the ice practice and in game situation thing. So comparing Torts not being accountable to keep holding his players accountable with all the clout he has throughout his career, I think it's just people being angry because they don't like it. If I'm in the media, he makes my job a living hell. I get it. I get that. I'm glad I don't have to go ask him questions. I would either not say a word or get myself banned. And you know, it's one or the other.
Well, it's not even, it's really not even that. It's really like, so like, I think we have to remember a little bit, like, this is a guy that's been around hockey almost his entire life, right? And, you know, a lot of the guys in the media, how can I say this? Maybe they didn't grow up playing sports. They grew up watching sports. Does that make sense? And, you know, how's this for an example? Myself. I grew up playing soccer. I didn't grow up playing hockey, you know, so all the little intricacies and the strategies and stuff like that, I'm not 100% on, you know what I'm saying? So what I get with Torts is there is a little bit of arrogance there, right? Because he knows exactly what he's looking at, exactly what he's talking about all the time. You know, no matter what you think about Torts, he knows what he's doing. He knows what he's watching. He knows the game. Some of the questions that are asked when you're like, Jack, imagine you're one of the best at your job, right? And you have this reporter who doesn't know a thing about what you do, you know, imagine it's me. Like, sure, I have an idea what you do, but I don't know exactly what you do, right? And I'm like, oh, well, Jack, don't you think you could improve this process a little bit? You're going to be like, Jim, you don't have an effing idea what you're talking about. You think that you do, you know, but he's got an answer to these people. And at the same time, he's like, are you kidding me with this question? You do this for a living and you don't know what you're watching. You know what I mean?
Couple that with the fact that, and I you can actually see some of his interviews like after practice, and he's a different person. He's a lot more even keel. He's still Torts. He asks him something stupid, he's going to let you know. But after a game, particularly a loss, he is emotionally, he's furious. He's an angry guy. It is what it is. And you're going to get the real Torts. And he's already irritated as it is. Look how he's treating certain reporters. Like, nope, not answering your question. How many games ago was that? Yeah, you know, like it's how he is. It's a part of the game. It's the Marshawn Lynch. I'm just here so I don't get fined. Like, he does not give a rat's ass. And it has not, in my opinion. The accountability thing is just silly. I don't think the players give a shit. I know ownership doesn't give a shit. I know the front office doesn't give a shit. And Torch sure as hell doesn't give a shit. The media, whose job is legitimately harder because of it, obviously cares. I would totally get that. It's their livelihood, for Christ's sake. And he's making it a living hell. You know, and so I get that. But as far as am I worried about the accountability of him with the team, or how could he ask for accountability and not be accountable? Zero effect.
Well, that's kind of what I mean. Like, okay, the media does have a job to do, but if I'm trying to think like Tortorella here, and he's employed by the Flyers, right? He's not employed by the media. And so now you have a lot of people who, you know, don't know what's going on necessarily between him and Couturier, what kind of conversations they've had, and they're going to ask their questions and spin their story up however they want from their own perspective. And so by not even coming out and taking the questions, you're not giving people the opportunity to spin any kind of narrative. Do you know what I mean? You're just not giving them the chance to do it. So like, this is what I mean. Like, does it look not great? Sure. What would be the reason behind it? You know, and he doesn't want to make it a bigger thing than it is. You know, the less you talk about something, the faster it blows over, kind of thing. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So I'm just assuming it's like, you know, if somebody who didn't have any idea what I do on a day-to-day basis was asking me like questions on how I could be better or this and that, it's just like, you know, what are you talking about? You know, what are you asking me? And he's got to do that. And I'm not saying that we should feel bad for him because he's making a lot of money to do this, but I'm just trying to like, you know, look at it from this guy's perspective. Now, not everybody's the same. Like, I don't know, just use the last few Flyer coaches. Dave Haxtell, we wanted more from Haxtell, right? He was basically a puppet. Like, he just didn't, you know, he was the least Philly coach of all time, right? We had Alain Vigneault, had a very nice personality, was good with the media, I think, for the most part, until things maybe got a little sour there. Tortorella's not that guy. You know, I think he's the kind of guy where you have to find a way to articulate your question in order, and I'm not saying manipulate, but you need to use the right words when you talk to him, kind of thing, you know, because the just one wrong word could set him off, you know, and that's it. So yeah, to your point, like, if you're going to ask him stupid questions after a loss, you should expect what you get, you know, and here's the thing, like, that's just real. That's just a passionate coach. It's a little bit of arrogance as well, which is fine. You know, it's just a whatever it is. But you need to, I think as people, we also need to adjust to somebody else, you know, where this guy's this certain way. All right, I need to ask him questions this way. You know, a guy like Vigneault or whoever, somebody that's good with the media. You don't have to articulate. You can just straight up ask him something. You know, people are different, and it's up to, you know, it's not always up to that one person to change. It's, you know, it's whatever. I don't want to get too far into that because we could talk all day, but.
No, I guess my point on that was I'm not bothered by the fact that he dodges something that he absolutely hates. And sometimes his reactions get taken really negatively on as a reflection on the team. Like, Sandstrom, the reaction to Sandstrom's performance. Now he's got to apologize for that because in the moment he didn't know. He just kind of was like, what do you want me to say? You know? And
that's a good one. See, I didn't even have a problem with that.
I really did.
To me, I thought like, and this is what I mean. I'm sorry. Go ahead.
No, I'll finish it up and let you go. Like, just the fact that he made that reaction to, he's already furious. You know, he made that reaction and now, not like we don't think about this stuff. You're in the moment. And now he's got to turn around and talk to his guy and be like, I didn't, the way that just came off, you know, looks really bad. Now, not only am I apologizing to you, I got to apologize to the media, you know, so people know I'm sorry. And then all of a sudden he stops showing up. Like, he's probably going to say something stupid. So he removed himself from the equation.
Well, this is what I mean here. Like, what do you want him to say in that moment? What, you know, the way the question was posed, the only answer that he could say was, yeah, we need more from Sandstrom. He needs to play better. He needs to do this. There was nothing positive that he could say in that moment, especially the way the kind of question was asked. And I don't think it was asked like that intentionally, but this is what I mean. There needs to be thought put into some of these questions. You know, it can't just be like, you know, we all just watch Felix Sandstrom give up 3 goals on 15 shots. You know, we can't just be sitting here being like, you know, he talked to Sandstrom. He said he had a tough game. You know, what did you think of his performance? What do you want him to say?
Yeah, what's he going to add to that? Yeah.
Actually, what do you want him to say? Yeah. Like, there's nothing positive that he can, he doesn't want to. So this is what I like about Torts too. It's very rarely, like, he's not going to talk shit on a guy. right? And if he can't talk, I mean, what do you want him to say? So he, you know, and in that moment, like you mentioned, he's pissed they lost. Maybe they're looking for something like that from him. I don't know. But he didn't have anything to say. He's caught up in the moment, the emotion of it, and just decided to say nothing. You know, in my opinion, I'm like, you know, good for him. He held back from saying anything negative about his player. You know, he had the opportunity to say, yeah, we need more. Kick him while he's down kind of thing. He didn't. You know, and I think he ended up saying something like, you know, he's working hard. He's trying back there. Something like that is what he ended up coming out with later on. But yeah, this is what I mean, though. Like, from media, I don't know. Wouldn't you expect more? A better question? You know?
Just not like a piggyback off the player that you just asked, expecting some kind of different answer. Like, you're just asking for him to roast his own guy, and he's...
Yeah.
See, I mean, he doesn't want to do that. Sometimes just after a game and he's furious, he... Even body language tells you a whole story. But yeah, I mean, I watch these things sometimes, but I don't go crazy about them because it all feels like a farce. You know, every now and then you get a good question, and there are good reporters in Philly. Don't get me wrong. They ask plenty of good questions, but a lot of times in certain games when it's almost like, I wish they'd just get on the plane and go, you know, cause there's really not a whole lot to do except for shit on your own team. And you're not going to say what you would have done differently in that situation. It's like, this is what we did. Maybe you could say something. We weren't as prepared. We need to get off to a better start. Well, you know, like, it's all obvious stuff. So I will say, if he did this overtime shenanigans, I would want that asked. Definitely. You know, I'd be like, look, if you did it once and it didn't work, it seems kind of like, what were you thinking there? Well, I can understand the ideology. But if you do it three times and all three times it results in a big fat L fast, then I do want some answers. You got to be smart. You can't, that's where I would come off pretty blunt and be like, yeah, this is three times now. Like, maybe it doesn't work. Try something different. These points are way too important. Just a thought. And I can only imagine his reaction to that one. But that is something I would want an answer to. And I think because that's the question he obviously dodged, just it fueled this media driven. Screw this guy. He needs to talk to us and yada, yada. But it's on his end. It's built up from a lot of bullshit. It just is what it is.
That was weird last night. I will say that, that Bradshaw came out after the 6-5 overtime loss to New York. And, I don't think, you know, I'm too pissed off right now. You need to go out is an excuse for that one. You know, you need to kind of go out there and explain, why did you ice the lineup that you did in the overtime? And, you know, was Ryan Poehling hurt? Did you know? You know what I mean? Because I would have liked to have heard those answers. So to me, yeah, last night was a little weird. Maybe we'll figure out why Bradshaw came out. Maybe it was Bradshaw that picked the overtime guys. You know, who knows? Maybe, you know, either way, you're the head coach. So if you let Bradshaw pick the OT guys, you still need to be held accountable there.
Yeah, it falls on you. And there's a lot of good comments, and it's a lot of Shadow here and Stan. But it basically saying, we get this from our top reporters, like the Charlie O'Connors, the Anthony Sanfilippos, like the more that you understand the game, like from a base level, the better questions you ask. And you see that with certain guys. And then other times you see some really stupid questions. And you get stupid responses, stupid answers, you know. It is what it is. So that has a lot to do with it. At the end of the day, though, Jim, I don't give a rat's ass if he ever talked. I know he has to, but if he didn't, I don't give a shit if he talks to the media again. I don't. He's going to tell you what he got to get you off his back so he can go back to doing exactly whatever the hell he was doing. Because, again, the only people he has to answer to are Jonesy and Briere. And this team is well overachieved anywhere they should be. So he's got enough clout with the history of his career and what he's done with his team that who are we to question it? Sure, is certain things 100% wrong, like overtime? Yeah, I would have liked an answer there. But we're dealing with two seasons, well, his whole career, really. But in Philly, two seasons worth of nonsense. And yeah, if he's just had enough, he's had enough. I'm not worried that the team is suddenly going to, oh, well, he's not talking to the media. Why should we have to answer to him? That's just ludicrous.
Yeah. Yeah, I agree. What do you say we transition a little bit? We're still stick around in the gauntlet talk just for a tad here. But I did want to talk about Morgan Frost a little bit, Jack, who, you know, he's been playing well going back to the beginning of January now, right? Was it January 6th? Was it when he had the conversation with Tortorella and whatever, and his game changed pretty noticeably since then. And, you know, there was talk still of, you know, he's putting up a lot of points against bad teams and yada yada. And we had talked about that on a previous show, and it wasn't so much true this season. He was scoring points against some pretty good teams, but this seven-game stretch was a great opportunity for him to really shut a lot of people up, right? And he did that, or at least he should have done that. Through the seven games, Frost finished with 2 goals and 5 assists in those 7 games. And if you want to add in the San Jose game here, 3 goals and 6 assists in 8 games. So 9 points. So pretty good from Morgan Frost. A pretty good stretch. The only game where he didn't record a point was against Florida, and that was, you know, a pretty tough game all around for everybody. Great assist last night for springing Owen Tippett to tie the game. Morgan Frost, Jack, are you completely sold?
It takes a lot for me to be completely sold, but I'm definitely more sold than I'm not sold, like 80%. Like, to me, it's just getting him started earlier. It's not even consistency anymore. It's just, can he get going earlier in the season, which is fine. It's not a big deal. I see this talent. I see the skill. He's the team's de facto number one center right now. You know, if he just got to keep playing and keep getting better. He's a playmaker. He's getting, when you see him playing with more and more confidence, you see what he's capable of, what his hands are capable of. Suddenly you start to not mind the pass between the legs. Cause there's I'm like, well, you know what, on that one, I think the guy he was passing it to screwed up. Now he's definitely got some work to do there, but that's like highlight real shit. So he's doing a lot of other stuff. He's always in the right place at the right time. It seems like lately his defensive play has improved tremendously. He creates offense, and it's exactly what this team needs. I want him out there on a power play. You know, there was a little stretch where the power play had been scoring. He had something to do with that. So I'm at a point now where I don't worry about Frost. I'm on to the next person I'm worried about who's could or could be an NHL player, may or may not be here. You know, Frost, it's for now, it's in a rearview mirror. I expect him to get better. And even if he has a slow start next year, I know by December, January, he's going to be good again. So, yeah, I don't prefer that at all. And that could be something of an issue. But the point is, I don't think he's going to stay the player who starts off slow and is a third line center. No, I think he's much better than that and has already proven it.
Yeah, it certainly looks like he, at least right now, has cemented himself as the Flyers 2C. He's been fun. He's been a lot of fun to watch. I've enjoyed watching him play. You know, especially I think from sitting up in, you know, the press box, you can kind of see him throughout the ice. And one of the biggest things with Frost was he needs to improve his play away from the puck. And I think he's done that, you know, a defense. So he doesn't let the puck come out of the offensive zone as easily anymore. He pressures the puck. He pressures the defense in the offensive zone. A lot of times they end up coughing the puck up, you know, and he'll get possession. He's been a very fun player to watch, and he's creating offense. It seems like he's just kind of doing his thing out there, you know, but he's playing great, Jack, you know, like Flyers needed a 2C. If this is the player that he can be for 82 games, they have their 2C, you know? And I think, you know, we were talking like this, I think, last year, right? And he proceeded to not play for what? How many games was it earlier this year? 7 games, something like that.
I think it was like 10 total, like 6 in a row, then another 4 or something like that.
Yeah. So, you know, this is the Morgan Frost that they need. And even when he was playing well last year, I don't think he was playing this well, you know, and this seems to be a long enough stretch to where I would be comfortable saying, okay, this is Morgan Frost, you know, looks great. He looks great on the power play. Him and Tippett together, I think, needs to be a thing. They need to play together. at least on the power play, the what was the game? What was the last home game, Jack? Was it Florida? It's like they're on the same frequency together. You know, they both look for space without the puck. They both look for space to receive a pass, and then they look to set each other up, kind of thing. Frost and Tippett, I think, need to be a thing. They could be a lot of fun to watch. But yeah, just an impressive stretch for Frost. At a point in every game except for Florida through these last seven games here. So mission accomplished, I think. You know, if there was still people out there saying that he doesn't score against good teams, can't say that anymore. You know, you need to find a new argument, whatever you can find there. Because that's not a thing anymore, thankfully.
Hey, and two rough teams coming up, so I expect a hat trick in each.
Yeah, now it's that he's not scoring enough against the bad teams. Yeah, that's all.
He's so talented. He should be able to score. Yeah, Chicago, Montreal coming up next. So, hey, look out.
Yep. All right, so we talked OT units. We talked Gauntlet. We talked Frost. We talked Torch Dodging Media. So there was some news that came out, I think it was yesterday now, about Alexei Kolosov. You know, I think his team wished him well, that he's coming over to North America. They were saying their goodbyes on Instagram, social media, whatnot. I think Kolosov still needs to get his visa, and then eventually he'll come over. No word from the Flyers yet on what's going on with any of that. So I'm not going to assume when he comes or whatnot. We can talk about, you know, what we would do with him, Jack, when he gets here. So I want to preface real quick. So Anthony Sanfilippo put something out earlier that if he was sent to the AHL, he can be called up because technically Felix Sandstrom is up as an emergency call-up, right? And so with the emergency call-up, it's kind of like a revolving door, as long as, you know, they keep calling up like a goalie with it kind of thing. So I think originally the emergency call-up was Cal Peterson, and, you know, because of the Carter Hart stuff. So they needed a backup goalie for Ersson. So Cal Peterson was up as the emergency call-up, and they sent him down, and they called up Felix Sandstrom as their emergency call up. So then now they have Sandstrom up here as the call up. If they want, they can send Kolosov to Lehigh and then, you know, rotate him with Sandstrom, and then Kolosov would be the emergency call up still. So there is a way to send him to the AHL first and then call him up. I just wanted to make sure that we were on the same page there. I guess the question would be for you is, you know, when he comes over, do you send him right into the fire with the NHL, or do you send him down to the Phantoms for a game or two?
I think he's definitely going to go to the Phantoms for a game or two. We discussed off air about the different size rinks and how that's not really a thing anymore. However, I think it's nuts to throw him into this NHL playoff race behind not exactly the best defense right now. They're injured. I understand we need some help. He's got to get his feet under him a little bit or something. Give him 2 to 3 games in the NHL at least. I think it could go really bad if you just bring him up here. I know we like what we see. I know we think we need it. We do kind of need it, but we could also really screw with the kid and screw ourselves in the process for this year. So do it right. Remember, we're still in a rebuild here. Send him to the AHL for a couple of games.
Yeah. So depending on when he gets here, so I'm kind of the opposite spectrum there. I think it would probably be easier if the Flyers weren't in a playoff race, or if, you know, if they were pretty much like cemented in the playoffs already. So obviously the decision is a little tougher, right? Cause if they weren't in the playoffs, you could say, all right, let's get them up here for a game against like the Blue Jackets or the Canadiens or something like that. Right. But being that they are in a playoff race, it's like, well, let's think about this for a second here. Like we kind of want Sam Ersson to start, you know, every game left, right? They do have one more back-to-back away from home against Buffalo and Columbus on April 5th and 6th. So they most likely are going to need to start a backup there. They have 3 days off before those two games, so we'll see. But what I would do is I don't see the harm. And, you know, he just went through an entire Russian season. It's a professional league. He played very well over there. Let's see how many games he played real quick. How fast can I bring this up? So he played 47 games regular season and then 6 games in the playoffs. So 53, which is, you know, about what a starting goalie typically plays in a regular season NHL. You know, he's had some time off. He's a good goalie. I think that I would probably toss him in for a game, Jack. Like, I don't know when he's going to get here. What are we? March 27th. Let's say that he can get here the first week of April. I toss him in that Saturday game against Columbus maybe I get him in that Tuesday game against Montreal where the Flyers have 2 days off before it or something, you know? And then they finish with New York, New Jersey, and obviously Washington, you know, just to give Ersin just to give him a few days off. I mean, I don't know. I don't see the harm. Like, he's a better option, presumably, than Sandstrom right now. He's going to be excited. I assume he doesn't speak or understand any English. So it's not like he's going to be reading the papers or listening to what people are saying. He's not invested in this team emotionally at all. All he's got to think about is stopping a puck. You know what I mean? I'm sure the adrenaline will be up a little bit. I don't know. I would toss him in, you know, and if he does give up 5 goals, it probably wouldn't be the first and it's not going to be the last time. You know what I mean?
It would be an interesting game, that's for sure. Probably a short leash on him, but you're playing with fire. I get it. And Vinny brings up a good point here. We all think Ersson's is pretty burnt out, and it was Appleyard that said that the amount of games he's been playing since he's taken over full-time for Hart has basically been more than anybody in the NHL, and it seems to be showing a bit. You got to do something, which is why I asked you last week, you know, picking up a guy for free like Antti Raanta just for that fact, why wouldn't they do that? I don't know, head scratcher, because Sandstrom ain't it. Peterson certainly ain't it. I think you had said they want to see what they have in Sandstrom, and that's a good point because he's probably not going to be with the team much longer. But at the same time, I can't help but worry about Kolovtsov's his development. It's goalies is all confidence. You know, it's a lot of it's confidence. They're voodoo as it is. I don't know if you want to mess with that. At the same time, I could see it going well and feeling stupid for having reservations about it. And that we need something. We do need something. We can't just toss them out there for the last 9 games and then the playoffs if they make it. Like, Christ. So something's got to give. And I'm hoping they can get a couple of games in with them in the AHL and then maybe potentially bring them up if they have to. Even that I feel iffy about, but part of me is putting this season first because they are in a playoff race, and I would really like to see these guys get that playoff experience. I think it would mean a lot.
Yeah, I see, for whatever reason, and maybe it's because I don't really pay attention to goalies that much, but all he's got to do is stop pucks, you know? And it's not like he's going to forget how to play goalie over the summer. So it's like, bring him over, let him get a taste of NHL action, and it's going to go one of two ways. He's going to play, you know, well, or he's going to get crushed. And I just, the way the Flyers play, I don't, you know, they give up 20 shots on goal sometimes. Like, they don't give up a ton of shots, you know? So they do a pretty good job protecting their goalie. They block a lot of shots. It's not like they're giving up 40 shots a game. Like, if they were giving up 40 shots a game, then I'd be like, do we want to subject this kid to this? You know what I mean? It's going to be a shooting barrage. You know, he's going to think over the summer, shit, is this what it's like? I'm going to be just, you know, getting crushed for 60 minutes straight. It's not really like that. Like, the game that Sandstrom lost, they gave up 15 shots. 3 of them got by him. You know what I mean? So, I want to see him. Yeah, right? Like,
I get that.
How do we know he's not going to come in and it's like, whoa, this guy's a real shot in the arm. You know, I'm willing to take that chance. You know, let's see if he gives them a jolt. All of a sudden, the Flyers have 2 goalies heading into the playoffs. That's how I see it. I see more the positive. And if he does get shelled, all right, let's send him to Lehigh. Not a big deal. You know, let him get his legs under him. He apparently wasn't ready. That's all. That's kind of my perspective there.
Look, I hope he comes over and steps in and is the next Sorokin or Shesterkin. I really do. But excuse me, I can't help but the whole situation makes me a little bit nervous. Something's got to give. Hopefully they can just weather the storm a little bit here and then, you know, get them some AHL games at least and have them come up that way. Part of me thinks that they don't want them to come up at all. I think that they're going to roll with what they have.
Yeah.
We shall see. But I would like, yeah, there's some teams that you could definitely put, you could start them against, like a Columbus or something like that. We'll see. Definitely something to monitor. And if he does come up, that's going to be a highly anticipated game.
Yeah, for sure. And for the record, like I don't hate Sandstrom. Yeah, there was a couple goals he could have stopped. You know, I think what made it worse, it was only 15 shots. Flyers only put one pass to Lars. Like, you're not going to win too many games with one goal. You know what I mean? You know, they did their job defensively, so I understand that. I get why everyone's upset with Sandstrom. But yeah, I mean, the games where Sandstrom starts, you need to be prepared to score three or four goals. You know, that's all. So yeah, it was always going to be a tall order against Florida, who don't give up too many. And once they get a lead, it's pretty tough to take it back. So speaking of defense, we have the Flyers winning games against Toronto, Boston, taking New York and Carolina to overtime, you know, with the likes of Eric Johnson and Yegor Zamula and Adam Ginning and Ronnie Adderd as your second and third defensive pairings. And I got to say, Jack, like, I saw a world where the Flyers could have came out with zero wins during that seven-game stretch. You know, when you look at that D and you think to yourself, man, they have two games against Boston, two games against Toronto, Carolina, New York. You know, where are the wins coming from with that D core? Like, they're going to get lit up every night. Like, the way that the Toronto game and the first Boston game went, that's how I saw things going. Like, oh, man, the Flyers are going to have to score 5 and 6 goals a night to be in these games. That wasn't the case at all. I thought they played, I don't want to say extreme, I don't want to say well, but they played good enough. They held their own. You know, I don't think, up until last night, I don't think they lost games because of those guys. You know, and I'm talking about the Eric Johnson goal there. He kind of just coughs a puck up in the corner and Brodzinski puts it in the back of the net. We had his dad on last year. I don't know if you remember that. Do you remember we had Johnny Brodzinski's dad on?
I knew we had somebody's dad. I did not realize it was yeah, him.
We had him on to talk about Bryce Brodzinski, and he was talking up Johnny the entire show, which kind of made me – he's playing really well up there in New York, so good for him. He's getting his opportunity, signed a 2-year contract with them. So, but, yeah, I mean, let's talk about this D-core a little bit, Jack.
It's – I totally understand where you're coming from with who – those names you just gave me with the injuries and the gauntlet that was coming up and how the gauntlet started. To their credit, like, if you can shelter some of their minutes, like, honestly, like Johnson, you know, he can be effective when he's out there. York has really stepped it up. Obviously, he's been the number one D man pretty much for this team this year. Sanheim has been, it's funny, I can't tell you how many times I've seen Sanheim on a breakaway or a really good scoring chance and get stoned. But the point is, he's there, he's making plays and whatnot, and getting in, it's hard, have been what you've needed them to be in this situation. And I saved Zamula for last because I really noticed him last game. He's making decisions with the puck that, like, veterans make, that, you know, I was very impressed with. Just guys coming right at him. Defensive cores of the old would have gotten rid of that puck in a heartbeat, like, just fired it down the other end. And he's making a similar, like, move to the left or right, and the guy, like, peels off, and he's back to doing what he does, and he's very effective offensively, puck movement, shooting. Like, they could obviously be better, but compared to what we thought we were getting, I will certainly take it, and I think pleasantly surprised is the perfect expression. And yeah, I still can't wait for some of these guys to come back, but for the gauntlet we went through, they stood up, they did what they had to do.
Yeah. They just had to hold down the fort until they are healthy again. And there were reports this yesterday morning that Seeler and Drysdale are skating. Still really no word on when they'll be back, but you have to take that as a good sign, especially for Seeler, since he's been out since he blocked a shot. So it's a very good sign that he's skating. Yeah, I'm not sure how much more we could have asked for or expected from this bottom four. And they held him above water, which is, I think, all we were hoping for at this point in the month and of the season. You know, just get them there, guys. You know, you don't have to win them games. Just don't lose them any games. Like, these are players where you're like, just don't lose it for us. You know, just go out there, and the less we hear about you, the better it is, you know. And you mentioned Zamula. It looks like Linden 49 agrees with you here, and he looks comfortable. You know, a very solid third pair guy. We were talking about him in the group chat last night. Like, he had offensive opportunities even, you know, it just, he couldn't capitalize on them, unfortunately, but it's nice to see. You know, they have a lot of guys, they have a lot of options, you know, for potentially that bottom pair. And hopefully when they get a little healthier, we'll see how things shake out. I'll be curious to see who stays. Will it be Adder that stays up, or will it be Jinning that stays up? I would assume if Sealer comes back before Drysdale, we probably don't see Jinning. Or if it's Drysdale that comes back before Sealer, we probably don't see Adder, you know, different style player. I don't know. I mean, now, is there even a reason to, you know, rush them back? I mean, their next five games, you got Montreal. Who's the one on the weekend? Chicago. You got a big game against the Islanders on April 1st. And then you got Buffalo and Columbus after 3 days off. You have Buffalo and Columbus Friday, Saturday. So there is a stretch here. You know, the Montreal game could be a trap game. You know, after, you know, you go through seven games against the teams that you did, and maybe you think to yourself, ah, we can finally relax. You know, like, we're playing a worse team. Like, that could be a trap game. So it'll be, you know, that's a big game for them. They need the 2 points. Now, the way the teams played this year, I don't know. Do you think that they'll, you know, you think they'll be, this will be a letdown game? You think they'll come out flat?
No, I don't. I think if they had won the game, but there would have been a better chance of that. I think because they were capturing points, it's a combination of, and how Capitals and Detroit, because of course that game's got to go to overtime, gaining points and having games in hand, especially Washington. I think that the fire has been lit under their ass. I think that they know that they can't afford to let up the gas. There's only 9 games left. I don't see any letdown games, and maybe, except for maybe on a back-to-back of some sort, just not having it. But I don't see them playing down to somebody right now, at least not too terribly. But I've been wrong before. I just feel like every time I go to doubt this team, they make me eat it. And last week was the first time I was like, look, I'm going to give them the benefit of the doubt, because they've proven us wrong so many times before. And they probably could have came away with more points in those scenarios with the two overtime games they played in the gauntlet. So, and with that defense, when you name that defense and then look back on how they've done in the gauntlet, you got to be like, I'll take that all day. Yeah. You know? And so I got to imagine this team just finds a way.
Yeah. And I love that, you know, find a way. It's gritty, scrappy. You know, they have some skill sprinkled in right now, but there's more on the way. You know, obviously Michkov's coming. There's some younger defensive prospects coming. Like, we haven't seen Drysdale unleashed yet. We haven't seen him to his full potential. So when that comes, like, we just haven't seen it. If you go back and watch some Anaheim games, that's what we can expect offensively. Defensively, obviously, the Flyers play a little different. So, I mean, that's what he's focusing on. Kind of like what they're doing with York. You know, we're not seeing as much of his offensive side because they want him to focus on the defensive side. All of a sudden, Cam York's their best defenseman, you know. Well, Drysdale, I don't know if Drysdale will be as good as defensively as York, but offensively, he's hands down the best offensive defenseman on the team. And it's unfortunate that he got hurt, because, you know, it kind of slows a lot of things down development-wise. Absolutely. A couple comments here on Montreal and Chicago might not be as easy as we're making it sound, I guess, Jack. Zach chimes in. Well, Chicago took out Calgary 3-1 last night. Might not be as easy as we think. And then Megan chimes in. Montreal and Chicago can easily be seen as trap games. They will be trying to play spoiler and ruin the Flyers' playoff chances. Flyers have a tendency to play down. They can't do that. I thought I saw a comment. Oh, Habs trapped the Avs last night. McKinnon got his point in 43 seconds, and Colorado didn't score another goal. I think Colorado lost to Montreal last night, Jack.
I think that's what he's saying, yeah.
3-1, was it?
Good, to get those those out of the way so when they're not as gung-ho when they play the Flyers. Teams like that, though, you know, I think Calgary's out of it. And they were traitors at the deadline. I know it was somewhat close, though, or getting close, because Markstrom's play had been so much better. Now they're out of it. Wait a minute. Let me see the points.
Yeah, they are.
They're out of it. And Colorado's, like, definitely in. So I think the Flyers, and I'm hoping for this, earlier in the season, 100% trap game. But, like, it still is. But I can see them powering through. They need to. They need to be sharp. They got 9 games, and they survived the gauntlet, but they lost ground. I mean, yeah, they're still the third in the Metro, but the Caps, they could be even with the Caps the rest of the way, and the Caps, 2 games in hand, could eliminate the Flyers from the playoffs, depending on how Detroit does. Like, they can't afford that to do that. Like, they really – and I think Torts will get it in their heads that they cannot fart around. There's 9 games for them left. And 11 for Washington. That's huge right now with how close they are in standings.
Yeah, absolutely right. And so the Capitals have won 3 straight. They're 10 games over 500 for the first time this year. They're coming off wins, a 7-6 win over Carolina, a 3-0 win against Winnipeg, and a 4-3 overtime win against Detroit, which was the worst case scenario there. Mm-hmm. Those are some pretty tough games, and they won all 3. Doesn't really get easier for them. They play tomorrow night against Toronto. They played Toronto at home last week and lost 7-3. So maybe they're due for a win. I hope not. But they go up to Toronto. Then they come home and play Boston on Saturday. And let's see. Then they have Buffalo, Pittsburgh, and Carolina. So a little tougher stretch than the Flyers have, but like you mentioned, they have the 2 games in hand, and those games aren't really even until the last 2 weeks of the season. So the last 2 weeks of the season, Washington has 4 games the 1 week, and then they have 2 the last week of the season, whereas the Flyers have 3 games the 1 week, and then they only have the 1 game against the Capitals the last week. So, you know, this upcoming stretch, the Flyers need to keep their lead here. They can't give up any points. They can't be heading into the last 2 weeks of the season down in points to Washington, I don't think. It's not exactly the hardest schedule for Washington the last 2 weeks until they get to the last 3 games. And I think this is really where, you know, it's going to come down to the wire, as it should. It's NHL playoff race. It should come down to the wire. Washington's last 3 games of the year, Jack, they have 3 games in 4 days. The first game against the Tampa Bay Lightning. That's a Saturday game at 5:30. Then they have the Boston Bruins at home on a Monday night. And then they have the Flyers on a back-to-back in Philly the next night. Could you imagine if they do it again in Philly in the shootout, something like that? Would get a lot of people really pumped up, wouldn't it?
Absolutely.
I think the Flyers have a few games off before they play Washington. I just want to confirm here. But I guess the point I'm making is, you know, it's going to come down to the very last few games, as it should. Yeah, the Flyers have the same night that the Capitals play the Lightning, that Saturday, the Flyers play the Devils, and then they're off for 2 games. And for once, they'll be the team waiting at home in a big game for the opposition. I feel like it's always the opposite, don't you?
It certainly feels that way, yeah.
Yeah. So last game of the year, the Flyers will be kind of waiting on Washington to finish up their game against Boston. Hopefully it's an extremely physical game, whatever. I'm sure the Bruins will be, you know, they'll have clinched a playoff spot well before that. So we'll see. It's all going to come down to that game, no matter how we slice it, unless, you know, Washington somehow goes off the rails and they've been, you know, pretty inconsistent for most of the year up until recently. So it's going to be fun, at the very least. Hopefully there's no tears, which we've been very accustomed to.
We got this. Come on, baby. Survive the gauntlet. Take it the rest of the way.
Yeah. I just, so the thing is, they can't let their foot off the gas. It can't be like, oh, we got through it. Yeah, you're right. It needs to be, let's friggin' go now. Okay, we got through it. Let's go. Okay. All right, boys and girls, we're over an hour in. We touched up on all of our topics. Jack, was there anything we left out here?
No, I think that's all the relevant stuff.
Boys and girls, if you don't have any more questions or comments for tonight, we are going to wrap this show up. The Flyers do play, is it tomorrow night? They play tomorrow night against the Montreal Canadiens. I tried to get Marco on for tonight. Marco from Montreal Hockey Now, D'Amico. He's been on our show, you know, like a bunch of times. But I wanted to get him on tonight for tomorrow night, talk some Habs hockey. We'll have to set up another date. But Flyers at Montreal Thursday night. And then they're at home with against Connor Bedard and the Chicago Blackhawks. They need 4 points. They're not going to be easy, but they can't. They can't have anything less. These need to be two wins, right?
Absolutely. Absolutely. How you doing going,
Jack?
Oof. Okay, you said Montreal, then Chicago, and then who?
Yeah, just do Montreal, Chicago.
I'm going two wins, baby, and one of them is in overtime. But they're winning them both.
All right, that's
fun. Let's go. They get healthy, they get mean, they get serious, and they take two when they should.
All right, there you have it. Flyers, two wins. There'll be 11 games over 500 when we're talking next week. For Jack, I'm Jim. We're going to wrap this one up one last time. If you're watching on YouTube, subscribe and set alerts for future shows. If you're in, I'm sorry, we're not on the Twitter space. Make sure you guys head over to hoo.be/HW Hockey or check out bonfire.com. We have some new merch on there. If you head over to bonfire.com, search HW Hockey. Check out the merch and spend a couple bucks on there. So show us some support. We appreciate you guys. Give us a like and 5-star reviews, all that fun stuff. I guess it helps. You know, I can't tell you how. I think it gets us in front of more eyes and ears, which we would appreciate. So thank you guys for, you know, as always, hanging out with us and chiming in the comments. It's always great seeing you guys. So we'll be back next week. Let's go Flyers.
York versus Caulfield. Tune in.
Oh, I forgot about that. That would have been a great topic.
No.